You are listening to The Talking Show on K-Chung Radio, Chinatown's only micro-broadcasting radio station. I'm Nicholas Miller, here as ever, remotely, with Steve Cato.
Hello.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, this is quite a milestone episode. Maybe we should just open up with that.
Yeah, so we've been doing an episode remotely via telephone set up by Gunter every week, minus one. We'll not talk about that since the beginning of so-called lockdown. And this is week 19, making this coronavirus episode 19.
There you have it, folks.
COVID-19.
19.
So, does that come from the fact that it was discovered in 2019?
It does.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was just coinkydink that this was the 19th coronavirus they discovered. But
No. It was the virology nomenclature. It was like SARS coronavirus, 2019.
I see. So they must not find that many per year, because that'd be a terrible naming system if you found, say, like 30 per year.
They find all kinds of the viruses. I think it's just the ones with sort of potential.
Yeah.
Like get this, the ones that actually enter the sort of public health realm, those get discussed this way.
What do you think the social scene at the CDC is like?
I mean, morale has got to be bad.
No, but even like, in peace times, let's call them, like, I just imagine, like, how could you work at the CDC and not just like quickly evaporate into someone like Howard Hughes?
Oh, I think that on the one hand, you've got like competent scientists who have trained for this their whole lives, like for whom virology has been their calling, right? Or public health is their calling, and they have a level of understanding of these things that people like us don't.
Where they're like, I know about all the possible threats, which are innumerable, viral threats, but I know that the chances of getting them and becoming terribly ill is this or that.
Yeah, or like I'm at work, and I know that at work we've got these precautions against it.
You go to a movie and someone sneezes. Like, how would you deal with that?
I see. I don't know. I mean, I think you would be like, you'd be like, oh, there's like a 1 in 3 chance of,
Right. Exactly.
I think there's things like that. I think in general, I mean, the other thing that I think is very likely is that, unlike, unlike maybe other, yeah, I think like people in technical trades are really able to compartmentalize well. I've known people who work in the sort of mapping product at Google, which is like, on the one hand, a useful thing, right? It's a thing used by many, but it's also like contains all the technologies that are like among the most sinister that a company like Google develops. Like knowing where you are, aggregating data about where you are, like things of that nature are generally like that's the scary shit, that's the stuff that people, privacy advocates, or like when we're thinking about like, when the protests were on and there were all these, well photoshopped graphics being spread around Instagram, owned by Facebook, telling you to like turn off your data on your phone so that you aren't, so that your phone doesn't send its location. It's like all the technology surround gathering massive amounts of location data is developed by companies like Google, and all of the people that did that didn't think like, oh, I'm just in the process of destroying civil liberties or whatever. you know, like they were just like, oh wow, cool. You know, like now my, you know, my, before I get home, like my toast, I programmed my toaster to make me some toast because I love fresh toast when I get home. So it starts the toast when I'm at the door downstairs, and when I get up to my apartment, it knows, you know. And then I told my boss about it, and then my boss was excited, and we added that to, as like, we added like that aspect of my work into the thing. So now it's like, you know, your smart speakers or whatever. And they're like, oh, this, you know, everyone applauded it, and I was the hero. And I had a good day at work. and like, you know, it's like, that's cool, I guess. But also like, you did just do something that'll, you know, destroy civil liberties as we know it or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's like you chipped away at a very scarcely maintained social order. And you just took another swing at it with your pickaxe there, buddy.
But it was for a more efficient toasting.
Yeah, you know, and I exactly. And I think that same sort of compartmentalized outlook is very much at work in probably most public health, you know? Like, I would be surprised. I mean, I'm sure that, like, in lots of cases, they're like, oh, yeah, no, I'm not going to smoke, you know? Like, but I'm sure that, like, all of them have, like, dropped food on the floor while cooking and, like, just picked it up and been, like, 3-second rule. Like,
yeah.
I'm still going to eat this thing. I'm still going to put this in the frying pan.
Still going to eat sushi.
You know, and like, you probably, you know, and again, if they were like truly terrified by what they know, they would like never, you know what I mean? Like it would absolutely not be allowed. But like in the case, in the, you know, the dog would not be allowed in the house. You know, no cats. Like, you know, like as much as I think we love our cats, you know, it's like you get toxoplasmosis. Like they're not neutral.
No.
Biological entities. So I think it's like stuff like that where they're just like, I leave that part of it at the zoo. I leave zoonotic diseases at work, and I come home and like my cat puts his ass in my face while I like try and stream Star Trek, and it's fine. You know, like this is fine. I love this, you know. I don't know. That's my thought. And I think it's probably true of everyone, you know, like if we truly considered all of it, like none of us would ever be employable even, you know,
like, or it'd be very hard to work.
It would be really hard to like have a boss. If you were just like, you're the worst, you know, why are you doing this?
Yeah. What do you think about the soft pats just above the tail on the cat?
In my experience, it's very controversial with cats.
Yeah.
It really, there have been like maybe 3 husky sized male cats that I've known that have fully loved this. They thought that was like great. And then many cats that I have been close to have absolutely hated it.
Chiquita likes it quite a bit.
There you go.
I mean, she seems conflicted about it. It's like a kind of too much enjoyment, too much pleasure.
Oh, wow. What do you think's in it for her?
I have no idea. I mean, the Reddit forums I've read on this phenomenon are very mixed.
It's so you wait. So is there like a dedicated R Reddit like base of tail pat?
Yeah, butt pats.
R / base of tail patting brackets felines or something like that? Is that the thing?
No, I think there was some Reddit conversation about it, but I feel like if my memory serves, the best conversation was on like a Yahoo Answers page or something.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like an area that's hard for them to scratch. Hard for them to get to without a kind of, I mean, they can get there, but it's a contortion that doesn't like, it doesn't invite extended discovery.
Yeah. There's lots of areas of cats in general that you can like go too far, you know, and the cat's like, unfortunately you've gone too far.
Right.
For you, human.
Right. Chiquita's response to it is, you know, like, she digs in her claws into whatever's in front of her and kind of moans. And then when you stop, she tries to bite you. So I don't know if the biting is revenge for putting her in that state, or like, why did you stop?
Yeah, right.
But your cats don't like it.
None of them do. Yeah. Almost immediately get bitten by Jeff if you do it to Jeff, and Langley absolutely not.
Yeah.
Like that entire part of Langley is forbidden.
Yeah.
It's kind of like from the shoulders down, like you really shouldn't dare.
How about the belly?
Off limits.
Yeah. Yeah. Chiquitas gives you this look like you want to die.
Many of my family, growing up, my family cat, this was his foremost pleasure.
Yeah.
He would just roll over you as do it to him, and he would love it.
I long for that. It's a soft area.
It's a very cute part of the cat. I feel like maybe Jeff will get there, but at the moment it's still just like too pleasurable, as you say.
Too much, yeah.
Speaking of Reddit forums, I learned of an interesting social subgroup, which is, and I don't have any, unfortunately, I guess, or fortunate. What is fortunate? What is unfortunate? Unfortunately for our listeners who are counting on me to deliver well-researched takes, I didn't do any subsequent research after discovering them, but apparently there are people who are upset about the bass frequency used in music, i.e. that if you have like an equal temperament, an ensemble playing an equal temperament, and they are basing their equal temperament off of A440, which is a standard sort of pitch, that is somehow bad, and that it would be better if they were using one of the other similar pitches. I know that like certain European orchestras, for example, pitch a little lower, like maybe 6 hertz lower.
Yeah. Steve cued me into this earlier today, and I think it was 437 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is 3 hertz lower for math challenge listeners than 440. And instead of doing research, I just embarked on a series of sort of thought experiments, I guess. And I just couldn't figure out what was in it for them.
Well, the accusation is that it's over time slows human reflexes, right?
Yeah. But my understanding of these things is that like the vibration, like the frequency at which something vibrates is purely conventional, and that it has no, you know, and the interactions of vibrations between each other, you know, like from 440 to 880, let's say, an octave, that's a relationship that can be felt. And you know, maybe in terms of if you were like a Harry Parch type character, I don't know. You would argue that like equal temperament is like, these are bad intervals, you know, and it's like bad for people's ears to like accustom themselves to this sort of inharmonious tuning system, right? But that like it's in the relationship of pitches, not the specific bass pitch itself, that the sort of that virtue in temperament lies. And so I'm just trying to figure out like what is for, do you have a, as a former physicist, do you have like a method of telling if 437 is a prime number?
Oh, geez. I don't know. No, I don't. I highly doubt it though.
Why? Out of curiosity.
Because the prime series becomes, so like in the lower integers, the prime series, the numbers are rather close,
right?
Comparably, and as you get higher up in the positive integers, it becomes harder to find numbers that are only divisible by themselves and the number one. You know, because it's just like, imagine how many ways you can slice 20 compared to the number 4.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
It's just, I don't know. Just more. It's like a pie, mm-hmm. a baker's pie. There aren't so many ways to slice it into four pieces. There are many ways to slice it into 20.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Like you said, it seems like 440 was probably chosen because it was, you know, the length of an average Dutch man's arm or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Or it was like, you know, like what, at the point at which like Helmholtz actually measured an A,
mm-hmm.
and discovered that it was like 436 hertz or whatever, you know, he was just like, let's just make the math a little easier for me, huh? Let's just like, mm-hmm. make this a round number. Let's round it up to, you know, 440. No one's going to cry. and I just want to like try and unpack how this, you know, like, I mean, there's this whole, as often is the case, especially under sort of growing authoritarianism, there's this like back to tradition,
mm-hmm.
Movement that's like palpable, especially in certain sectors of Reddit. You know, like there's the people who hate brutalist architecture, but who cannot identify brutalist buildings when confronted with like
Judd, I mean, or brutalist.
Yeah, they will inevitably identify a brutalist building, but they will misidentify like a modern building, a merely modern building, as brutalist as well. You know, or a shitty wood frame condo with, you know, crappy, you know, sort of like shipping container aesthetics. That is also to them brutalism, which is like, that is also not brutalism, you know?
Right.
You were saying?
Reminds me of a great segment I saw on a TV show when I was much younger. This is before I moved to California. I think that they were clearly on like the Santa Monica Pier or something like that. And they were asking people if they believe that we should have soldiers in Iraq. Uh-huh. And the people that said yes, they would then hold up this cardboard, you know, map and say like, could you possibly point to Iraq on the map?
Oh, yeah.
And it just had like, you know, all of the countries labeled, and then it had Australia labeled as Iraq.
Uh-huh.
And of course, and I'm sure it was edited to display only people that made this choice, but, you know, people would like, mm-hmm. kind of search around the Middle East for a while and not find it. And then you'd be like, oh, there it is. It's right there, just to, you know, just in the in the Pacific Ocean.
I don't think I could, like, so wait, they had mislabeled the map before they presented it to people?
Yeah, of course.
I see. So it's like, yeah, I think on an unlabeled map I would have a hard time identifying Iraq personally.
Sure. I don't think I would point to Australia even if it had the words
I know
Iraq
about Australia.
It.
It's true. I am aware of where it is.
Yeah.
It's cool that they put it over there. It's like I wonder in their mind when they're like, "Ah, oh, the Middle East, a zone of strife and conflict," like where they think like Israel or like, you know, like where are the Iraq, you know, Iraq and Iran, like where are they in relation to each other if that's Australia?
Yeah.
You know, like.
But I mean, to your earlier point, I feel like any unit of measurement coming out of Europe in that time, it was arbitrary. You know, like what one hurt is not a natural.
I think a hertz is actually pretty, it's like the number of beats per second.
Of
has
what?
Counted. Of like the frequency, like when you examine the period of the waveform.
Oh, okay, sure. How many times it goes from top to bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think unlike Celsius, Fahrenheit, other things, a hertz is actually like a very reasonable physical unit. I think it's more just like things like what is A, you know,
or
the
what
note
is
A,
or but then the second is made up. That, I guess that's the part of that equation that's made up.
Yeah. Well, and even just deciding that one numerical value is A over any other numerical value, that is purely conventional.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's even less well founded than like taking the distance between water freezing and water boiling and dividing it by 100 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
you know, like scents make no sense. For example, dividing the space between pitches by 100 is absolutely unhinged. But like, I think her, like it's rare when like a unit literally just counts the thing. I think, which is what's nice about Hertz. To it, you know. Anyway, I have the feeling that the people who are upset about the 440 standard are people who want us to go back to like their imagined, like the exact tuning of like Beethoven's piano or whatever, you know, whatever note Beethoven preferred, or probably not even Beethoven, you know, like they're like, Bach's organ was tuned this way. You know, we should go back and abandon poisoned modernity. But I mean, I guess I haven't done the research at all.
You know, I remember I went to like a third, fourth, fifth, whatever wave we're in a couple years ago, coffee shop, with Amanda Galley, your neighbor and friend, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, it was one of those places where if you bought a bag of their extremely expensive coffee, you got a free drip coffee.
Yeah.
And she was out of coffee, so she decided to do that. And she asked the very snooty guy at the counter if she should freeze it, which is something I've always done. You know, I don't have a good reason, but I just, you know, my mom did it, whatever. Also, things keep better in the freezer. That's generally the case. I guess, you know, it can drain flavor from meats and whatnot, but anywho. So she got in this long debate with the guy about whether or not she should freeze the coffee. Her opinion was that she should, because she always had, and you know, like I just said, freezing generally preserves things. And his final argument, which I thought was quite good, because he doesn't freeze his coffee, was he said, if you can tell the difference between coffee that's been frozen over the period of a week and coffee that hasn't, then I think you should do that. And I thought, that's how I feel about the 440 hertz thing. Like, if you want to tune your orchestra to 437, go for it.
Yeah.
Like, if you can taste the difference, your motor reflexes stay alert longer than the rest of us, then have at it.
Yeah, I think, I know that the orchestras that do so in Europe, for example, they're very closely associated with their concert halls as well.
Yeah. So, you know, sure. So they put some effort in, you know?
Yeah, well, and I'm sure it happened before scientific measurement of these things specifically occurred. But I bet that, like, you know, if they tuned up a little bit, it would be, like, less in tune with, like, the walls
the
around
the acoustics,
them,
sure.
Or something. Like, I give those orchestras that, you know. And if they've always been doing it, like, why fuck with it? Just keep doing it. But, seriously.
No, for sure. I agree.
You know, like to what end? But then when...
Don't,
like,
if it ain't Baroque... Don't fix it.
I can't wait till the coronavirus is done and we are again allowed to have Baroque music night.
Yeah.
I miss it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to, you know, their I guess there's this new feature on Instagram that it shows where people are based. You know, like it says like Toronto based on some people's accounts. And I'm pretty sure that they haven't actually set that setting.
Oh, interesting.
Or maybe it's just for businesses, you know, and I'm curious about it. Or maybe they opt into one feature and then it sort of spits that out on
but
the side.
It's not a user generated field.
It doesn't seem to be because it's not funny. You know, it's like there are people who are funny who's
yeah, it's like Maria Bamford is Altadena based. Like, no, I don't think she put that in there.
Exactly. You know, like you would normally use that as an opportunity, as a vehicle for humor.
Yeah.
If it were me or you or one.
Hell based.
For a common choice. And then you name the circle, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So I feel like I was thinking about just like the phrase like Toronto based. And then I was like, oh, it'd be hilarious if there was like a Miami freestyle night called Toronto based. And then I don't know. Yeah. And then I was just like, oh man, like my DJ night concepts are like freestyle bass or Baroque music. These there's nothing in between. These are the two kinds of DJ events I'm willing to host. You know, you can have this or you can have that. There's only two flavors.
Yeah.
What do choose your fighter?
There's gotta be a town like somewhere in the middle of this vast country, like say Wyoming, called Free, and then those people are free based.
Oh man. You know that there's a town called Free. Exactly.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's not even in question. How many there are is the riddle. But
yeah, well, you know who we could ask? My friends who created the Google mapping platform.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
thanks,
just,
guys.
You know, they can just figure it out right away. yeah.
Speaking of Google Maps, have you... I always get their names wrong, but Elm Green and Dragset?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's actually just Elmgren.
Elmgren.
Or Elmgren.
Elmgren.
And Dragset.
So they had a show that came out last week before, I don't know, at some gallery in Berlin. 303 Gallery, I think it was called. I can't remember exactly.
303 is in New York. They moved to Berlin?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe possible. I'm pretty sure the show was in Berlin. Whether or not it was 303, I can't say. But they had, it's a pretty good sculpture show right up my alley. They had like a 3D tour. So I was like, well, I got to do this. But it was like the quality of Google Street View. I found that really humorous. So it was like, you know, you click the little arrow to move forward and like there's that kind of like interstitial moment where everything becomes kind of blurry 2D and then like pops back into like supposedly three dimensions. And I would say it was not the most pleasurable way to view sculpture or art installations. Also, there were some great shots, like in any good Google Street View, where like from certain angles you could see the whole apparatus that was shooting the room.
Right.
Because just like, well, they're not going to change the lights for every single pano shot. So it was pretty funny.
Was it Gallery Koenig?
Maybe. I mean, it was definitely a rather well-funded gallery. Yeah, tennis players. There's like two young boy tennis players. And then
this really is up your alley.
I know, right? Yeah. Well, you can guess. People sent it to me. But yeah, and there's like a creepy old guy in a wheelchair watching two young boys play tennis.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of Elmgren and Dragset public art when I was living in Scandinavia.
Oh, good.
Because they're like, I think they're like Swedish and Danish or something like that, or like individually. Mm-hmm. And so like they could double dip in like the two richest pools of
Scando money.
Yeah, and then they're actually Berlin based, so then they can also do Germany.
Oh, and goodness.
You know, so it's like literally every funding body had a reason to fund Elmgren and Dragset.
All roads lead to.
Yeah, yeah. It's like everyone was like, "Oh no, but we can definitely do that." Like, yeah, we'll fund you.
Yeah,
boy. Oh boy, yeah. It is wild. So, we were talking about the milestone we passed. It's now COVID-19.
Yep.
And since when you surpass a sort of a milestone like that, it's usually, I think, a good idea to have it mean something.
Yeah. So we've decided to apply to have both of our faces carved into Mount Rushmore.
No one has done a more heroic thing in this country since we recorded 19 episodes of The Talking Show over 20 weeks of largely self-imposed lockdown, it turns out, because like people are just doing whatever. You can just do whatever, apparently.
Yeah.
When I left Texas, people were going in person, indoors, two restaurants that were advertising crawfish boils.
Yeah, they were licking the handrails at the DMV.
I mean, that is essentially what is going on when someone goes to a crawfish boil. You essentially sign up to lick the table. So I only learned about crawfish boils maybe in January when a friend of mine in Texas, was like, there's this thing that's going to happen in a couple months when it's crawfish season.
Yeah.
It's called a crawfish boil. And I was like, you know, I'm up for whatever local social custom exists. Like, mm-hmm. if there's anything that's like a little different than just going to Target.
You're also into eating competitions.
Yeah, exactly. So there were parts about it that were really appealing to me, but then there are other parts of it where I was like, this seems horrifically unhygienic.
Yeah, you know? I mean, you end up just getting like fully covered in biological matter.
Yeah, and so I was like, I this doesn't sound clean or safe. It does, however, sound like a fun thing that, you know, hasn't happened in any of the other places I've lived.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, wow, cool, you know, can't wait. And then obviously, like, crawfish season kicked off immediately, I think at the same time as coronavirus.
How dare they?
Well, it really closed down, I think, a lot of people's plans to run businesses selling crawfish. I think a lot of crawfish vendors were very disappointed.
It was like, did it turn into like fireworks? You know, they were only sold on like the outskirts of the county or something.
I mean, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if like literally, I mean, so Elgin County, which is just outside of, Austin, the Travis County where Austin is.
Yeah.
Had a no masks allowed ordinance that was based in the we must have discussed this before, but like it was based in the sort of distant past of cattle rustling and train robbery or whatever, where
it wasn't in response to COVID-19.
Well, it was a little enforced, or the law had existed since the 1800s.
Yeah, but it was the kind of law where it's like you can't tie your horse up afternoon at the mm-hmm. courthouse or something. And like does it in 2018 and gets arrested. And you're like, oh my goodness.
Well, so it's one of those laws, but it became vigorously enforced as a result of the, I think, very red counties' desire to not, you know, believe in the COVID, the Chinese virus, you know, to not submit to China. They decided that, you know, if you went inside a building in Elgin County, you had to take your mask off.
Wow.
And so I bet that 100% that there was some like vigorous indoor
crawfish boiling
going on in Elgin County, just on the threshold of Austin. But that is to say, after our self-imposed exile of this long, we've reached a conclusion, and this is going to have an impact on you, the listener, come next week.
It's true.
And that conclusion is that we are going to go back to having guests.
It's true. We're currently planning how this exactly will come out. Like so many institutions these days, we're having to play it day by day. But we do have a plan in place. It's been in place actually since 2016. We've been discussing it.
It's been put in place under old laws to do with cattle rustling.
We had to, like so many people these days, we had to turn to older techniques, like 437 hertz, to figure out how to get guests onto the talking show. But we can assure you, next week, you will not have to listen to the somber tones of Nicholas and Steve for an entire 30-something minutes.
Yeah, no, we'll have someone else in here talking. And so maybe we're going to be out in a park at a great distance from them, pointing a shotgun microphone at them.
Yeah.
Something like that, maybe. Maybe we will be surrounded by bulletproof plexiglass.
Right.
That will have just been wired up with microphones separately, and we will all leave.
Or perhaps we will. Perhaps our application to rent the Kaechung mobile unit will come through, and we will be hosting the show next week from Elgin County, Texas.
Or we'll just be inside.
Yeah, we'll just be, you know.
Jim's crawdad.
We'll be eating crawfish and slobbering on our guests.
who knows?
The talking show, yeah. Unmasked.
The talking show, live from the Wuhan Institute of Virology's right. fruit bat unit.
No one cared about us till we took off our masks.
I've been wearing those New Balance face masks.
Oh my goodness.
And they do make you look a lot like Bane, which I find to be extremely pleasurable.
Well, shall we lead them out with a Bane voice, Steve? Why don't you go?
Oh, I'm not ready. Do you have one ready?
A Bane line?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I like the one where he goes to the stock market and the broker says, this is a stock exchange. There's no money to steal. And he says, oh, really? Then why are you here?
Oh, and then later he's like, that same guy's like, you know, I own you. I'm the one that's in charge. He goes, do you feel like you're in charge?
This is not the time for fear. That comes later.
That would be very painful for you.
Oh, God. Good morning, Chinatown.
Good evening. Let the games begin. He's truly the icon of our time.
Goodbye, everyone.